Right now, Karen and I are going to go kind of a tag team through kind of the recipe of cooking up a successful congressional visit. And then, as I said earlier, Mike, Chuck, Karen and I will do like a mock visit up here in front, because it's not brain surgery, as I said, but it's a process like any other process, and seeing it sometimes can give you a little insight into the best way to handle it. So again, it's like we repeat this over and over again, because we think it's very important that you contact us if you're going to do this, whether you're at home or whether you're coming into D.C. to do a Hill visit in one of our Congressional Visits Day activities, which we encourage you all to take part in. If you're interested, just let us know, and we can annually, we set up two or three of these throughout the year. We fly in scientists, you visit with your senators and your representative, usually with a common message. And one point of clarification, though, I'd like to make before we go on is Chuck mentioned, don't talk about funding, and that's true when it comes to your institution. So if you're going in from K-State, you don't want to talk about funding for K-State, because it'll go crossways with your administration and cause everybody a lot of headaches and hardship. But when we do our funding initiatives, those are on a like an agency level. And so you can talk about, yeah, give a 10% increase for NSF. Those kind of funding things are usually okay by your administration. So what do you need to bring? A commitment to do the visit. You know, you have to really decide, I want to do this, and I'm going to follow through on it. Knowledge of your regional issues. It's like Mike said, you got to know what's going on back at the district or the state. That's what they care about. Anecdotes of how science addresses these issues. You know, members of Congress and staff members are people like anybody else, and interesting anecdotes are really, you know, well received. And then dates you can visit, whether you're going to come into D.C. or whether you're going to be back home. You know, we specified August, but that's not set in stone. I mean, there are other recesses. There's President's Day recess. There's Easter recess. When these senators and representatives go home to visit with their constituents. So now, Karen.
So now that you know what you bring, is the next step is what we will bring. And part of that is we bring information, background information about your delegation. What we'll do is we'll put together a packet for you. We'll tell you a little history about your every Congress member in your delegation, and what their voting history is, what they're interested in. We also bring in knowledge about the budget and timeliness. When is it appropriate, and when? What's hot? What's hot off the press? We keep our thumb on the pulse, and we bring that information to the bulk of the visit. Then we also we bring information on policy and some of the politics behind it. This is a very important piece that we bring, but it's a little bit hard for me to explain it. It's basically, you know, the ins and outs of what's going on the Hill and who's affiliating or who's in line with another person and working on the same bill or who's not. And sometimes you have to know what those politics are in order to convey your message well. We also bring a guidance and understanding of the process. We have a lot of practice at this. It's our jobs. And so we have an understanding of what the staffer is seeking and what the office is seeking, and how you can both achieve your unique goals, you and the office.
So again, it's just the overriding principles establishing this relationship long term with your delegation. Contact our office. You want to identify some colleagues, one or two colleagues that can join you in this visit, and that's simply strength in numbers. We found that, you know, it can be a little intimidating as a scientist to go and visit with your representative or your representative staffer the first time, but if you have a couple colleagues with you from the same district or state, it just makes it a lot easier. You have companions to join you. We've done a lot of these in that approach. Identify a best time to make the visit so we have an idea of when to plan this for you. And work with our office to develop a message. It has to be short, to the point, strong message. Prepare thoroughly. That just simply means review the materials we send you. These materials, like especially the background materials. We've had remember in the past, when the Republicans were the majority in Congress, we had some people come in and they didn't read that this member thought that climate change was a hoax. And then they were saying how important it was for the senator to support climate change legislation, and it didn't go over well in the meeting. So it's important to make sure you read the background documents. And they're actually really interesting, and you learn quite a bit about your delegation you never knew. And then we make it even easier. If you're doing this at home, we'll do a walkthrough, practice walkthrough on the phone, you know, just pretending that we're sitting in the office or out in the field doing this actual visit. And then you meet with the delegation. So you want to, these are just district state meeting guidelines. They apply to the Capitol as well, but you want to follow an appropriate dress code. Usually it's business attire on the Hill, but if you're out in the field, clearly it's informal. You just kind of, you know, judge for yourself the situation. Be prepared and succinct. Sometimes, one staffer told me, said, in a nutshell, what I'd like to know from you in the first 5 minutes is who you are, what the issue is, and why that's important, and then why it really should matter to my boss. Because one guy said to me, you know, you got to understand, I'll have maybe 25 visits in a day. And if I come out of a visit and I have no idea what they wanted, it's really frustrating to me because I have to report to my boss. He said, what did they want? I said, well, I'm not sure. So you really have to make sure you make your point. It's called the ask. What's your ask? And that's why they have their pad of paper. They're going to write down, this is what they wanted. And they're there to serve you, but they need to know what you want. So most meetings last about 10 minutes, so plan on getting quickly to the point. You've seen multiple meeting lengths with Chuck's slides, Mike's, and ours. The truth is, you just don't know. We had a scientist from North Dakota State University in last month, and we had a 15-minute meeting set up with Senator Conrad. And Senator Conrad came rushing in, and he said, give me the 2-minute version. I got to go to the floor. So we were ready. He said, sure, 2 minutes. Here it is. Here's the one pager. These are the points. And then he went through them, 1, 2, 3, 4, responded well, and then he left. And again, using the short anecdotes or facts really bring it home why it's important to me and my state or my district.
Okay, so a couple more meeting guidelines. Like Dr. Rice said, it's important to keep your personal opinions sort of quiet and avoid patronizing or complaining to the staffer. And sometimes this is hard to do, but it is necessary. Remember, your interests are broader than, you're representing a broader constituency. Also, Carl talked a little bit about the ask. We'll talk more about that a little bit later as we get into the meeting. But limit your intro, who you are, what you do, where you're from, who you work for, and ask to about 10 minutes typically. Now this, if you're having a meeting in your district, especially in August, you'll probably get a half an hour as opposed to a 15-minute or 10-minute interval. So this varies, but typically, especially if you're meeting with a staffer who has appointment on appointment on appointment, you want to keep it short, like Carl said. If you're going with a group, you also want to select a spokesperson. You'll be with a bunch of different colleagues, but you want somebody who can lead it off, who can kind of lead your group. And eventually, if you make a couple meetings together, you'll work together and you'll create a dynamic. So it's very rewarding to go with a team of people. Finally, it's important to be on time and be prepared to wait. Unfortunately, those are things that we as humans don't really like to go together, but it's just you're in a way at the whim of the office and the staffer and the member, and there's changes in the legislative calendar that the office cannot control, and it necessitates them to change their schedule. So they'll get back to you, and I've often found that even though you'll have a circumstance where a member might not be able to meet with you right away, their staffer will call them and you'll be able to meet with them in a situation that's more formidable to your message, actually. So that they'll say, okay, we can't meet in DC, but we're going to meet you back in the district and we're going to see your plots. And, you know, everybody likes to talk about their plots, so it's it actually, and it puts them right out in the field, and it makes the situation a little bit easier so that you have your examples right there.
So quickly wrap this section up. After your visit, you just follow up with a well-written thank you. You know, they're very rarely are they thanked for what they do, and everybody likes getting thank you notes. I know I do. And in that thank you note, email, or letter, include the relevant points discussed to show that you're actually responding, and then give that information if they've asked for specifics, which they will. And then remind them that you're the resource, because as Dr. Rice said, you know, he's become the resource for the Kansas delegation in many ways, and that's what you want to become. And then this can't be a one-shot deal. Now, granted, if you visit in person with a member or staff, okay, you do that once, possibly, because it's kind of a big deal, but then you have your phone and your email and your letters, and you want to do that at least at a minimum a couple times a year, because I know staff told me if I think this is a one-shot deal from a constituent, then I really won't pay too much of attention to it. But I think he or she's just not going to come back. So that's it for the formal phase. Now what we're going to do, we have a lot smaller audience than anticipated, so makes it more intimate in some senses. But anyway, we're going to do a kind of a mock hill visit, because I've seen as believing. We're going to be right down here in front, so you can see quickly. It'll just take a few minutes. Do kind of a typical visit. In this case, it'll be back at the Kansas State Experiment Station. Chuck Rice is the scientist. Mike Schmidt is the agriculture legislative assistant for Senator Pat Roberts. And Karen and I are fellow Kansas scientists working on a variety of agronomy, crop, and soils issues. So we're going to do a quick mock meeting, and then we have some folders for you which contain four documents. One is how to make a visit. It's like step-by-step approach. And then we have the leave behind to show you what a typical leave behind document is that you leave at the end so they have something to remember you by and what you ask for. And then we have one on our Science Policy Action Center and our webpage and so on, kind of good resources. And then the final one, Karen, is what's the fourth document on? I forget the fourth document. But anyway, it's a resource for you to take back with you when you leave the session. So we're going to do this quickly up here up front. And we'll speak loudly. It's a vacuous room. Guidelines, effective communications guidelines. That's the fourth document.
We kind of went over that.
Yeah, we basically used that to do some notes. All right, so we're here at Kansas, blazing hot. You convince the staff from D.C. to come out, and they will. You have to ask them. So they're likely to come out and see my research on doing K-State. So
you hear us in the back.
Okay. All right, so we arrive
here to start raising your hand.
Or come forward.
Move forward.
So this is the way
or move forward, yeah. Go ahead.
This is the way it works, and we wouldn't be in size right now.
Okay, yeah. I mean, but I would be wearing purple shirt.
And Mike's come all the way out from D.C. to do this visit. Okay. And Chuck is signing.
Thanks for coming out, Mike.
Thanks for
having me. Yeah, back. And this is Carl Glazner. He's a crop scientist at K-State. And Karen Gale is another soil scientist at K-State. And I'm a soil scientist in the Department of Agronomy here at K-State. We're out here on this project to show you some NSF funding, National Science Funding, that supports some of the basic research that we're conducting in Kansas. What we're interested in is we've requested a 10% increase for national science funding. And to give you an idea, an example of some of that work, this is one of the projects. We've received a $500,000 grant from NSF to look at carbon and nitrogen cycling in different ecosystems. And Karen is a young faculty member here at K-State, and it's important for her to get her start here to be more competitive in the future, and Carl's looking on the crop aspect.
How competitive are these funds?
NSF is extremely competitive. About 10% of the proposals get funded. So, and we had to go three times before we got resubmit three times before we get our funding. So that's almost a year and a half before we received funding for this project.
I'm not as familiar with NSF, but I know NIH, we doubled that a couple of years ago.
yes, is to start ramping up the funding for NSF. The challenge is for NSF and for our scientists is that state level funding has decreased for a lot of universities. And so not only is the funding flat, but there's more faculty competing for those dollars. So the funding rate success has gone down from, used to be 30% 30 years ago, now it's down to around 10%.
How does this help farmers? Is there any way to help farmers? You talk about carbon, is it something with climate change? Or?
Well, that's an extremely relevant question. Even though this is basic research, we're looking at how you can change microbial communities to affect carbon cycle. The impact, as you see here, go down the soil, okay, all right, and blue soil. We have changed the carbon and that's improved the quality. So I can see these aggregates here. If you look at the till system here, all right.
So that's like carbon?
This is darker. It's more aggregates of water penetrates in the soil at a faster rate. Also, there's a lot of nutrients. With farmer, that means that there's more nutrients in the soil, less nutrient input, so that increases profitability. And of course, being competitive in farming is extremely important. So reducing the input cost is a requirement for increasing profitability.
Is there any chance long-term that farmers will get paid for doing the no-till and sit there? I know this is crazy.
Right, yeah, and Kansas has been one of the leaders in establishing part of the voluntary market where farmers are getting paid. In Kansas last year, there was 130,000 acres signed up for this carbon credit program run through Chicago Climate Exchange. Now, right now, the money for that credit is running around $4 a ton. The farmers are getting about $2 an acre per year. That may not sound like much, but it's a start. It's a voluntary program, and so that might increase.
Does this work with any of this? There's a new working rights program, the Conservation Stewardship Program. Is that, will that work with this? Will the no-till work with this?
Right. The carbon program is independent of any federal program. This is a private market. So a farmer could get CSP payments or other equip payments and still then participate in the market. So it's added value to some of their other programs that they get.
But it sounds like it's important work. I know Senator Roberts supported the American Beef Act earlier this year. I think that makes some of these similar investments. I know from a foreign policy perspective, it makes it it's really dangerous to have, to not keep the talent in the U.S. and not do the investments that we need to do.
Right.
And get our scientists.
Right. And if you remember, Senator Roberts a few years ago was on the state program to increase the competitiveness of the universities. And it's important for young faculty like Karen to become better established and compete for those federal funds. And then also the training of the graduate students. We have 5 graduate students on this project, so it's training the future scientists, plus it's bringing income into the state. And so just as a summary to wrap up, we have a handout here somewhere.
Yeah, we need to
Okay. And
state sheet.
And just the state sheet shows you that Kansas has been getting around $35 million this last year for NSF. And so by increasing the funding in our NSF, that will increase our chances of getting some of the competitive funds.
California gets $796 million. What's the deal with that?
Well, much, much larger state, and we're working on becoming more competitive.
And I guess we'll just leave you with this. This is a couple more factoids about how NSF funding is really, the innovation of NSF funding is really contributed to science for this nation.
Great.
And I've left my business card with you, so feel free to give me a call or contact me anytime if you have questions.
And I know the first bills still aren't done, but as this moves forward, if the vote's on the floor, feel free to give me a call too, and you can do one of my cards.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And that wasn't rehearsed, by the way. Chuck said
it was rehearsed.
It wasn't. It wasn't, obviously, but it's the way it would go. And you could get, that was just a generic type visit. You can get all sorts of reactions from somebody that's so harried and busy that they just really don't even think they, you feel like they can't focus on your visit, and that's okay. You're still there giving your message. Others that will are warm and fuzzy, you know, they want to talk to you all day. It's just human nature, just like in academia or in a government research institution. So anyway, that's the show for today. I want to challenge you, if I could get two people, and we'll have time for questions, but if I could get two people out of the folks attending here today to commit to making a Hill visit sometime in August for a district level visit, to me that'd be a huge success, because we're trying to get our members pumped up to do this and to become engaged in policymaking. And everybody I've had come to Washington, at least, and I've led through this, every one of them has said it's just been the most amazing experience. They didn't know how accessible their senators and their representatives were, and that had they known, they would have been involved a lot long time ago before that. So that's the end of this session, but we do have a little time for some questions, if there are any questions, and the four of us can address them.
Let me throw something out there. If you feel more comfortable doing a visit with me first, my contact info is up there, I give you my card. You can come visit me on the Hill first and to get your feet wet.
And there are two opportunities a year when we fly scientists in, so if you're interested in that, just leave your card, and we'll put you on the list of people to invite. And societies have a small budget, but enough to cover the expenses of a couple people to come in and take part in congressional visits here. And again, in your district, it's a lot. Oh yeah, and we have these folders too. Don't forget to take those on the way out. But I want to give a chance for any questions before we break.